Welcome to Denizen, where we tell the stories of people who inhabit this earth. I'm your host, Morgan. I'm here with my co-host and mom, Angela. Today on Denizen, we will meet Wendy, who moved to the U.S. from England.
Wendy is a client of mine. We met about 5 years ago at the salon I work at. I get super excited when I see her appointment in my schedule. Wendy is one of those people who you instantly fall in love with. Super easy to talk to and extremely friendly. She's so forward and honest, you can really have a great conversation because she doesn't hold anything back. Wendy's from England, so naturally she has that mesmerizing English accent. I could listen to her talk all day. She has a real knack for taking everyday situations and turning them into hilarious stories. We were thrilled when she enthusiastically agreed to be interviewed for this podcast. We met for the interview at Wendy's house, a beautiful old two-story with a big front porch and a swing. We were greeted by Wendy, who even on her days off in casual clothes, looks like $1 million. She's a slender woman with glasses and a trendy haircut. Her husband, John, was also there to greet us. This is him.
I have the laundry done, honey. Is there anything else you'd like me to do?
We also met her cat, Jet, who you may hear throughout this episode. Wendy showed us around, and I had a chance to see some of the new furniture and remodeling work that I had heard so much about over the last few years. We settled in at the table where we were offered tea and cookies. Wendy asked if we were brave enough to put milk in our tea because that's how the English do it. And since that's how my grandma taught us to drink tea, we agreed that that's the way to drink it.
Wendy started by describing her first visit to the U.S. in 1980. She was 26. She came to visit an English friend who is attending the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
We came in August, and it was incredibly hot. It was incredibly hot. We did touristy things. I went to a Brewer game. We went to Great America, where we commented that everything is bigger and better in America because we had never seen such big people.
Right.
It's funny now looking back on it, but that was, we just joked everywhere we went, everything's bigger and better in America. And we went to state parks, we went to Long Lake, to the beach, and we went to a mall. And I was here for 2 weeks, and I just thought I would like to learn more about America and spend longer here. But that's the first time I came. So then I went back and continued teaching. I just got a new job. So I left here, went back to a new job in a new school, new set of kids, and loved the job. But in the meantime, decided that I would look for opportunities to come back and work here, which is very, very, in 1981, was very, very difficult to do.
So you wanted to teach here or do something else here?
Found out my friend Valerie was a teacher here, but she'd been to college here. And so, it was easy for her because she graduated and, passed. She had all the requirements needed to teach in America. I knew right away that the only way to come to America at that time was to be a nanny.
Although Wendy loved her new teaching job in England, she decided to come to America as a nanny the following February of 1981.
How in 1980 do you find a nanny position? You didn't have the internet. How did you find things?
There's a magazine in England called The Lady. And I can't remember who referred me to this, but in England then, people were, English people would hire an au pair, like a mother's helper kind of person. Right. So it was a thing, And so there was this magazine called The Lady. And in the back of the magazine, there would be people advertising, like classified ads, for au pairs or you know, whatever, travel companion, whatever. And there was an agent, there were a couple of agencies, and I applied to an agency to find a family, thinking that I was 26 when I did all of this, so I wasn't a young girl, you know, heading out into the vast unknown. You know, I knew that you have to be careful, you know, with the right family. And so this agency found me the original family.
And then they called you and you just got on a plane?
No, they actually, I had to take a train down to London. And I met with family friends of the people who, that's why I ended up taking the job. I met with the family friends of the people who wanted a nanny in Connecticut. And the family I met in London were absolutely lovely. Large family, really warm and welcoming. They had this great crazy house, you know, messy and kid friendly. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. They were nothing like the people that they were friends with in Connecticut. Yeah. And then went back home the same day. And then, you know, they said, yeah, you've got the job with this particular family. The biggest mistake I made was I didn't realize, coming from England, I had no concept. And remember, I was 26. I had absolutely no comprehension that New York was that far from Wisconsin. So I came thinking...
Oh, you thought you could just drive over to Wisconsin to visit your friend.
I thought that on a Friday night, I could go to Wisconsin for the weekend. And it was very, very hard when I first got here to realize that when you live in New York, there's no way you're going to Wisconsin for the weekend. I mean, now you can.
Right.
And you could then, but again, it was cost,
right,
and time, and they didn't let you have that much time on. But it's a long way to come on a Friday.
Once Wendy had the job, the agency helped her with the details of coming to the U.S. We asked her to describe the process.
When you're 26, and you just want to come for an extended stay, the idea of tricking people into coming here doesn't seem like a bad thing to do, because I honestly, my intention was to go home, but I just wanted to stay longer than the 1 month visa. In those days you had to get a visa and you were allowed to stay as a tourist for a month. So the agency in London coached you, which made me feel very uncomfortable at the time, as to what to tell the customs agents when you come into the country as to why you have summer clothes. So
the agency helped you knowing that you were going to not be following the rules.
Yeah, because okay. I'm sure they get paid by the people who are looking for nannies.
So
I had a letter... a fake letter that they wrote saying that during my 1 month stay in Connecticut, which of course was freezing and cold, that we were going to go and visit family friends in California probably, and I would need to bring some summer clothes and a swimsuit. And interestingly enough, though, I could bring knitting needles on the plane in those days. It seems weird now. Yeah. So that explained why in my one suitcase, I had winter clothes and summer clothes. And then, obviously, when I came in, I knew that I was going to outstay my 1 month visa. And then what would happen would be that you would stay here a year. I think that's what the families typically imagine you to do, 1 or 2 years. And then you would just return. You'd buy a return ticket and you'd go home.
And they wouldn't question you going back in or get a fine? Or
I'm not sure.
They didn't warn you about what might happen if you overstayed?
I honestly can't remember that.
We asked Wendy what her family thought about her coming to the U.S. to nanny for a year.
I don't know. I suppose they embraced it in a way because they knew I was coming to as a temporary thing. It was me having an adventure for a year or maybe two. I don't think they ever imagined, and neither did I, that I would stay here. So they did, you know, it wasn't something they had to come to terms with. It was just, you know, Wendy's going to be gone for a long time. It was really hard, though, because in those days, like you said, there were no cell phones. I used to call home twice a year, once at Christmas and once on a birthday.
Wow.
And the rest of the time, I wrote airmail letters. So I wrote home a lot.
Right. How long did it take, like, for your letters to get?
About a week. Okay. So I know things have really changed.
Okay, so
I know now I can FaceTime my family and I can see them. It's like something out of a futuristic film that we had seen when we were kids. The idea that you could actually talk to somebody and see them on a screen is unbelievable.
Wendy ended up working as a nanny for a little over a year for two different families. It wasn't quite what she expected. She had a lot less free time than she bargained for. The first family she worked for was not an ideal situation.
When I first came here, I worked for a family who lived in near Georgetown, Connecticut, and he was a psychiatrist.
Yeah, I think that's the one you told me about.
Oh, yeah. Crazy psychiatrist. Yeah. And they lived in the middle of nowhere in a very modern house on a lake. The little boy was four, and he was, from what I know now, he was probably autistic. He was a brilliant mind at the age of four, but incredibly difficult to deal with. So I lasted there 7 weeks. And then moved into Scarsdale, New York, which was great because it was a community, you know, and they had neighbors, and the family was great.
Right.
Yeah. They had three kids. The mom actually didn't work. She had a brand new baby, and she played tennis every single day. And then they would go to the theater and go out to eat, and she'd work out, and, you know, she just kind of played. And then he worked in the city. And the whole time I worked there, I have no idea what he did.
Like, he didn't go to work?
He would leave the house in the morning, and he would go to the Jewish deli in the village. And, you know, kind of late compared to Wisconsin time, right. You know. And then he would head into the city. He had a business partner because I met him. And then he came back at nighttime. They would stand around while the children got fed. She always gave the children supper. And then they'd leave and go back into the city, which is quite a ways from Scarsdale, to eat out every single night that I lived there.
Interesting.
And then I would put the kids to bed.
What did they do on your days off?
What did they? Well, yeah, right. I had one day off a week.
And you worked there for how long?
A year. Yeah. I was planning on staying for 2 years and then going back to England, as many people who come here would probably say.
Wendy came here knowing full well she would outstay her one-month visa. At one point, she tried to renew it, but it did not go as she planned.
One time, I went to extend my visa, and it was in New York City, and the lady grabbed my passport, and she realized that I was here without a visa, and I snatched it back out and I ran like hell.
How long had you been here past your visa at that point?
A couple of months.
The family that Wendy worked for in New York offered to buy her a ticket to visit her friend in Wisconsin the following Christmas. Wendy called her friend to tell her the good news.
I said to my friend, I will come on one condition: that you don't try and hook me up with the the boyfriend that you tried to hook me up with when I came in the summer. And she said, oh, absolutely not.
So you had met him earlier in the summer and you didn't particularly care for him, or you just were like, I don't want to meet somebody here.
No. Yes, I liked him a lot and went back to England, and he came to visit that Christmas. And then it just didn't work out, because having a long distance relationship like that is very difficult. And he was never going to live in England. And so when I came back to live in New York, you know, realizing how far New York is from Wisconsin, that relationship wasn't going to work. And so we broke it off. And these two girlfriends decided that they would try and get it going again.
So I came, and they picked me up in Chicago, and the whole way home, her friend Rachel, they talked about everything but the young man that I had met in the summer. And then they very conveniently left me alone while they went to a wake. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't go to the wake, because the young man that I was trying to avoid came and invited me out for supper.
How convenient.
And a year later, we were married. And that's why I'm still here.
Wendy's friend Valerie from Wisconsin was concerned that Wendy was living in New York State without health insurance. Since Wendy was now in a relationship with her boyfriend from Wisconsin, Valerie's hope is that she would move to Wisconsin and marry so that she would be secure. So Wendy moved to Wisconsin and lived with Valerie to save money until her and her boyfriend got married a year later.
So getting married was the same as it would be for anybody. We got married in the Lutheran Church. It was legal, and I had to provide legal forms from England, you know, like your birth certificate and, you know, anything like that. And then I applied for resident alien status. And I was actually very, very pregnant when I went for the interview for that. So when you get married to an American citizen, you don't become an American citizen. You become a legal resident alien.
But you applied for that well after you were married?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, I didn't work. After I got married, I didn't work. And so,
So are you considered legal somebody as soon as you get married? Or not,
you know,
until
what?
You apply for that?
I think I don't know how it is now. I can, you know what? I can't even remember that. I think the only time I would have really discovered would have been if I was looking for a job or if I was trying to leave the country again. And I can't remember what motivated me to apply for it. Probably because I was going to have a baby.
Right.
And because I would have wanted to travel back home. So you apply to the Department of Naturalization, which still exists, and it was in Milwaukee, and you had to have it was right near the Pfister Hotel in this big brick building, and like a really, really old building, and you had to have a physical beforehand, and then you went for this interview, which was probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. It was the most uncomfortable. The interviewer sits rigidly at a table, and I was very, very pregnant, so I could hardly squeeze in between the wall and the table. And he treats you with your questions as if you're lying. And this was at the time when people would get married just to have a green card. So his questions would be something like, so how long have you been married? Well, at that time, we'd probably been married, I don't know, 11 months, let's say. And then, so we got married in March, and he would say, so you got married in June? You'd be like, No, we already said we got married March 25th. And then you'd have three or four more questions. And then he'd go back and then he'd say, so what was the weather like on the day you got married? That kind of thing. You know, always, always trying to trip you up. And I don't know if he thought I was faking my pregnancy. but the biggest concern was to prove that the American citizen was able to support you without you going onto any kind of welfare program or, you know, food stamps. I don't even know if they had them at the time, but that kind of thing. And so you had to have all the documentation. And my husband had a good job, and I wasn't even going to have to work. And I've never been on any kind of program. And I'm still a legal resident alien. I could have qualified to become an American citizen after you've been married for 5 years. But some people think that you automatically become an American citizen when you get married, which isn't true. Although people did get married in order to stay, because then after 5 years they could have got their citizenship.
Right. So did you find out, like, that day, or did they, like, send you a letter a month later, or how does...
They took... You had to... I remember standing at this table, and you had to give them a fingerprint, and he said something like, you know, you've made it. And I was like, what? And he said, you are... a legal resident alien, you'll get your card in the mail. And even though I was very pregnant, we ran out of there. It was so, we just could not believe that it had actually happened. Somehow it was like, they'll find something and they'll call us back, because it was that horrendous an interview. And I've heard other English people who came in at that time say that they'll never forget that day. It was horrible. It was really, really horrible.
So what's the difference between a green card and a resident alien card?
Oh, good question. Absolutely none. I have no idea how they got the term green card.
They're green.
My first one was not green.
So do you get a social security number when you become a resident alien?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know.
Yeah. And then... when I became a resident alien, I'm not quite sure how this happened, but there was no expiration on my card. And other people that I've met, they had a 10-year expiration. So every 10 years, you had to go and reapply. So I was here 30-some years, and I've been flying back and forth to England, and every time you show your resident alien card. And then we went to Cuba in 2012, and we were coming back, and the security guard, he refused to take my card. And I said, what? And he said, I'm going to cut this up. He said, you need to reapply because they've changed the card. You know, it's got a different chip in it now or something.
Right.
So I had to reapply at great expense.
So he literally took it from you right there and cut it up? Or did you convince him?
No.
Because you're cute and you can...
Because I was going to go to England the following March. And they said that if I didn't get my new card, that I wouldn't be able to come back. But, you know, I still had my resident alien card. So... So I happened to call one day and just say, how long does this take? And of course it takes a long time. So I ended up having to go down to Milwaukee, and then you go through the whole thing all over again.
The interview and everything. Mm-hmm. Really?
Not the interview. I had to go twice, and I had to have my eye. They do the pictures of your eye, and then your all your fingers now, and I had to have biometrics done.
Really?
Yeah. And walking in the building, whereas 30-some years ago, when I got my resident alien card, you walked in the building, you went up an elevator, I can't even hardly even remember it. This time, you have to go through full airport security. And they frisk people going in to get your resident alien. And when you get in, they've got these lines and barricades, and you know, they yell at you, you know, are you for this or are you for that? And it has not changed. I mean, I just did it a couple of years ago.
Wow.
And you feel like a criminal when you're going in there.
So they're not really like, how can we help you today?
They're not warm and welcoming about you becoming a citizen or an alien.
Wow.
It's still really tough. I've never wanted to become a citizen. And I think a Hmong friend of mine kind of clarified that for me once. He was absolutely thrilled that America opened its arms to him, because he did not have a country, and he was a refugee in Thailand where they weren't wanted. And when he came to America, that the best day of his life was the day he became an American citizen, because he felt he'd come home. And he said to me, you don't have that same sense because you still have home. And I think that's
that
the difference.
That makes a lot of sense.
And a lot of people say to me, why don't you become a citizen? And I say, well, would you give up your American citizen? Would you feel like you had to become a citizen of England? And most Americans say no.
Although Wendy chose not to become a citizen, there are a few things that she wishes she could do.
It galls me that I can't vote.
Right.
I can't become mayor of Plymouth.
And you would make a fine mayor.
But those are the only two things that I cannot do. I pay taxes, I pay into Social Security, I pay into Medicare, I've worked extremely hard, I've done great things. Those are the only two things I can't do.
After our interview, we asked Wendy to share some of the things that surprised her about the U.S., Wisconsin, or the Sheboygan area. One of the things that surprised Wendy were turtles.
So I end up living in this place where you looked out over this frozen, because I came in February,
right.
This frozen lake, and there were all these shiny black rocks, you know, in the reeds, and then discovered that they were turtles. And I didn't know until I came here that I am absolutely terrified of black turtles. I had no idea. Well, I did know that I didn't like tortoise. For some reason, I have this paranoid fear of shelled creatures. And then sports. I think that. I mean, we have football in England, and I was involved with rugby a lot as a girlfriend.
Wait a minute, you did not play rugby.
Been to lots and lots and lots of games and that kind of stuff. But in England, you don't become a professional rugby player when it's the college sports. If you're in sport when you go to college, it's just another thing that you're doing. So you go to college to get a degree and you happen to be on a football team or you happen to be on a rugby team. Here, you go to college to play sport, and the football and the basketball here seems to be so more important than the degree that they're getting. That was something that blew my mind. Still does.
The American obsession in general about sports.
Then the other thing, when I came in August, I didn't realize until I came back to live here that the first year that my husband went hunting, I thought was a one-off thing. I honestly, naively thought that you went on one hunting trip. I had no idea that it happened every single year.
Like, this was, it, like, hunting was something to cross off your bucket list?
Yes.
Oh.
So the first year when we were dating, and he went hunting, and I was all smiley, thinking, hey, this is really cool. Never realized that when you had two children, that they went every single year, that the men left you, and, you know, you were on your own for a couple of weeks, you know. I had no idea that that happened every year. I also I had no clue that as soon as hunting finished, they started talking about ice fishing. And then ice fishing, I had no idea what ice fishing was. That was really, really funny. So there's a bunch of us from England because my English friend's aunt and uncle and two cousins ended up emigrating here, and her mom and dad. So there were a bunch of us. Your greatest fear, you know, we're taking over. And they all became citizens. And there was one time we were in Fond du Lac, and we were looking and talking about all the big SUVs, pickup trucks and whatever, that were on a frozen lake. And we were like, how on earth can they drive on that lake to go fishing? And then we walked on the lake.
At this point in the conversation, Wendy gets up out of her chair and tiptoes across the floor to demonstrate how her and her friends were walking on the lake.
We had no comprehension of a frozen lake.
It doesn't get that cold in England?
No. A river might freeze on the edges.
Okay.
And I think once I remember the river freezing over that maybe people could have tried walking on it, but oh no. No. Yeah. And the great thing was when I wrote home and told people about ice fishing, you know, how they drill and make a hole, and then the famous comment was, what did they do with all the ice that they get? It's so hard. It's hard to describe. And to describe how cold,
right,
that you can't fill up your car. You know, unless you've got gloves on, because your hands will stick to the metal.
Right.
Even when you tell people that, you can't really comprehend it. Yeah, those are the big things.
We have one last question.
Okay.
Do you do an imitation of a Sheboygan accent?
This is funny to us because there's a difference in the way that the native Sheboygan people speak and the rest of the county. It's the accent that everybody hears when they listen to people from Sheboygan County, but most of us don't hear it in ourselves, just the older generation that's lived in Sheboygan their whole life.
Could you do it if you tried? Can you get rid of your accent into a Wisconsin accent?
What did they say? Oh, hey. I've picked up Sheboyganese. I go, hey. Hey, what do we do for this? It's
when you say stuff like that, do you go, ugh?
Yes, I do. I say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm saying that. Hey.
That's all we've got for you for today's episode. Come back next week and we'll meet Ivona, a refugee from Bosnia.
Hi, my name is Ivona and I came from Bosnia to the United States in 1995.
Thanks for listening to Denizen, where we tell the stories of people who inhabit this earth.